Okay, in the interest of time, I'm just going to get started. Good morning, I'm Martin Sepulveda. I work for the IBM company. Our company is in every industry, in every societal sector, and in most countries around the world. So in some respect, it's hard to say that we don't have an interest in virtually anything that's being talked about. But I can assure you, my comments this morning are purely my own. They do not reflect any views of the IBM company, and there's no commercialization or marketing in anything that you're going to see. I'm going to try to sort of mix up Joe Ivey and the other panelists in terms of showing you a few things and sharing a couple of comments. And there are really two take-home messages. One is that employers, particularly employers of knowledge workforces, large employers, employers who are global, care deeply about health, and they care deeply about the complex dynamic interactions of health systems. And the second is that cities are vital to business growth, and employers competing in that space recognize that health of the population and well-functioning health systems are really vital to their economic success in those environments. The interest in health and health systems really boils down to these four relationships. And one is healthcare cost is a vital business issue. Healthcare cost is an enormous competitiveness issue, separate and apart from the cost in a given country. The third is public expenditures in healthcare for private businesses are an incredibly important issue because it affects both the availability and the cost of capital in capital markets for investment. And fourth, that it's not often thought of, but healthy populations are educated populations, are skilled populations. They attract employers, they attract employment, they make money, they have disposable income, and guess what? They're customers. So if you can stimulate that dynamic, you've got a much larger population to whom you can sell your products and services. And progressive, visionary employers, they get that. I was at an innovation summit in 2012. It was a summit that was held in New York City. It was a summit that was composed of the leading country leaders who were driving innovation in their countries, and it was composed of leading young business leaders from around the world. And one of the most prominent subjects for discussion in that conference was building healthy communities, building healthy neighborhoods. Why? Because that creates markets, and markets create business growth opportunities. So a couple of data points. Business Roundtable data, CEOs asked, what are your most pressing cost factors in your business? Health, far and away, the most pressing business cost issue. This data is a couple of years old. Current data kind of reverses energy and healthcare, but both of those, far and away, higher cost concerns for business than any of the others. You're used to seeing OECD data. Most people in public health think about OECD data and the differential in terms of the opportunity costs that are foregone to invest in other societal sectors. Business looks at this and says, those guys up there, those are my competitors. And that kind of expense is built into my products and services. And when I come into a customer environment, I've got to deliver a value proposition that equates for the difference in that cost. And for many corporations, what's really scary is that these are our key competitors, not Western European developed countries, but it's rapid growth countries. And that's certainly true in knowledge-intensive industries. And as you can see, the differential in cost is anywhere from 4x to as much as 10x in competing with these countries. It's pretty scary. It's not just direct healthcare costs. These are data from really a landmark study. It was in the early part of the century. It involved, I can't remember whether it was 10 or a dozen different companies in a number of different sectors. They quantified for those companies in those workforces costs that were due to healthcare costs and costs that were due to productivity. And I drew a sort of a black line above those bars. Everything below the black line is healthcare costs. Everything above those lines is productivity cost. And productivity costs far outweigh for most of the significant conditions that affect people in the workforce than direct healthcare costs. So productivity is a big issue. Lastly, that's getting a lot of attention, particularly in our country, and I'll start from the bottom up. Companies also really care about public expenditures on medical care. These are federal data. In the bottom, you see the rise projected through 2038 of federal spending on medical care rising, that along with the interest on debt, driving the gap in the middle graph, which is the difference between federal revenues and federal expenditures, leading to the graph on the right, on the top, which is increases in the public debt. And increases in the public debt make foreign countries unwilling to make capital available in this country. And when they do, like me, if I'm a poor creditor, my interest rate is going to be high. So this impairs access to capital. So why do companies care about cities? Well, because that's where the people are, right? But it's not only where the people are, it's also where the talented people are. People with higher levels of education are disproportionately located in cities. If you look at talent in terms of intellectual property, most patents come from people in cities. Cities create an opportunity to really leverage and scale infrastructure. Cities also are far easier means to be able to extend, disseminate, and adapt innovation. And cities, particularly in our country, but also in many other parts of the world, are places that understand the dynamics of systems because they're faced with problems that are the outcomes of systems and faced with limited budgets and resources to be able to allocate to try and solve these problems. They understand that you can't cut your nose despite your face. And we've got people in cities around the world who are recognizing that. Let me diverge here and just make an observation. I would add to the comments of my colleagues that one of the most pressing things we need is better data analytics. Not more data, not better data, but better data analytics. We've got tons of data. We know what the root causes are. Our problem is, in my view, or one of our problems is, that all of this data has been captured with a kind of an analytic that's linear, it's deterministic, and often it's in silos, and it doesn't account for the dynamic interaction between all of these variables. And my hypothesis is that on a factor-by-factor basis, while you can't explain all of the variance, the variance is due to dynamic interactions between those, and we don't use the kind of analytics that allows those dynamics to be able to express themselves and give us a clearer picture of what impacts are, particularly faced with choices of what likely scenarios are that may result from different kinds of allocations of the resources that you have. Stated differently, this is all about complexity and complex systems dynamics analytics. The developed world crossed the urban-rural divide on or about 1950. continues to increase. About 80%, 78% or so of all people in this country live in cities. In the not too distant future, that will rise to almost 90%. The developing world, the rapid growth world, will cross that divide before the year 2020, and you can see from the top two curves how the proportion of living in cities will increase between now and 2050. And it's pretty astounding that, if my math is right, slightly over 9 billion people will exist in 2050, and something in excess of 8 billion of those, 8 billion of the 9 billion will be in cities. So what's happening in cities? Most people live in cities under 500,000 people around the world, but as you can see, growth will occur across all cities, particularly in cities in excess of 1 million people. Megacities over 10 million will increase an enormous amount, as will cities between 1 to 5 million. Some data: cities are the hubs of economic development. Here, this curve plots the ratio of the proportion of GDP the proportion of the population of that city to the country over the GDP that's produced in that city. I sort of added the unity line to this graph. Everything below shows that the proportion of GDP far exceeds that of the proportion of the population in the city. The more I thought about it, the more I came to the conclusion that this is a different representation of a lot of things that Paula and others have published over the years. And what it shows is, using UN development program kinds of indices, on the y-axis, it's really education. It also plots the Human Development Index, which is a composite of three factors. On health index, the health index is largely life. Life expectancy at birth, that education and the quality of the communities in which people live is strongly associated with health. Education drives skills and talent and quality of the labor force. And quality of the labor force attracts employers, employment, and is vital for economic sustainability. Here's my version. I'm going to give Ivy Jo this graphic to add to her portfolio. But essentially, health is an outcome of nature, mothers, families, babies, and communities in a very complicated set of systems dynamics. So from a complexity standpoint, health is an outcome of these kinds of dynamics, and these kinds of approaches need to be taken. And just to show you that I didn't make this up, this is a quote that comes from the World Economic Forum, which is an annual gathering of the most influential economists, business people, and government leaders from around the world. And the focus for that conference was on sustainable health systems. Why sustainable health systems? Because they believe that sustainable health systems will depend on sustained health at home and in communities well before the healthcare system is engaged. And it's all about networks and mutually reinforcing dynamics amongst all of these. So thank you. I look forward to your comments and your insights.
So there's a microphone in the middle of the room here. If anybody has any questions, you can either direct it to one of the panelists, or if it's general, then we can help find someone to respond.
Joe Nichols, family medicine resident and community health epidemiologist, with a question for Dr. Sepulveda, actually. One of the most clear, sort of best supported findings from the IOM report is this notion that early childhood development and sort of family dynamics plays a very important role in the overall health of the community and in very long-term health outcomes. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how do we make that business case, given that the women and the families that are affected by this are often employed, as we're trying to advocate for early childhood education and some flexibility with the workforce, given that productivity and limits to productivity seem to be a very big concern of businesses?
This is an unproven business case, but let me give you the architecture of it. On the one hand, women comprise an enormous proportion of the population and the workforce, and what consumes women's attention is of critical importance to employers. So the extent to which, and this was captured in some of the productivity data, that women, fathers, and families are distracted because of issues that are related to health in the home, that impairs productivity. You may recall that business in our country and in other countries, but I'll just stay on ours, has for many decades, you know, invested in work-life support systems for their workforces, and some of the earliest ones were around care for children, because a lot of the distraction or the outright absence for women in the workplace was related to caregiving while they were working. In our company, that's a business case that I made a long time ago. And about a half a dozen years ago, we took on a very direct issue related to children, not just for that reason, but because another dynamic that's occurring in the workforce is, unlike prior generations, young people are on average going to work for between 5 to 7 employers. They're not going to have a lifelong relationship to any given employer. And employers are recognizing that you need to think about the population as a whole, because the person may be working for a competitor for me today, but that's going to be my employee tomorrow. So employers are beginning, you know, to recognize that. And I think the third is that look, employers faced with, you know, enormous competitiveness issues and labor issues, you know, have developed strategies for being able to manage those. And one has always been, you know, don't just focus on the person with the problem, deal with the pipeline. Right? Deal with wherever this problem that I'm going to see is being created. So from a health standpoint, part of the business case is you need to think about those people that are working for somebody else, because they could be our employees tomorrow. And by the way, it's cheaper, you know, for us, thinking of our company 10 years from now, to invest in children and youth, because that's our workforce of the future. And by the way, and we've done this and we've published these data, you know, these dependents of our employees today, they cost a lot. Proportionately, they cost as much as employers, and for certain admixtures of chronic conditions in children, they actually cost more than adults. So these are kind of elements, right, of the business case that when I sit around with senior leaders and employers, I talk about these things and they get it. Well, thank you. As long-winded answer, but as a great question.